The next case is 001519, State of Ohio versus Lamont Jones. Ms. Williamson.
Good morning. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Watch your time there.
Thank you. This court has allowed consideration of the following issue, that is, whether or not a person who has been acquitted of a sexually violent predator specification under Revised Code 2970-102 can be classified as a sexual predator under the classification scheme pursuant to Revised Code 2950-09B. The 8th District has decided this query in the negative. In fact, they said that Revised Code 2950B4 specifically precludes a hearing on this issue, and even went on to say that there was no need for a hearing if the state could not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that an offender was not likely to engage in the future in a sexually violent offense, that the state therefore could not prove by a clear and convincing standard that this same individual was likely to commit a sexually oriented offense in the future. The state respectfully disagrees with that decision and would like to offer this court postures for this court that such a classification is possible under the following analysis. And if I may ask the court's indulgence for a moment, I'd like to set this up kind of in a top-to-bottom order, so to speak. Revised Code 2950-09A states very specifically that where a person is convicted of the sexually violent predator specification, that the sexual predator classification is automatic. No hearing shall be held. The last line of that paragraph says that in all other cases, the courts shall follow the procedures that are defined in Sections B and C. For our purposes this morning, of course, Section C does not apply because all of those folks are people who have been serving time in prisons and would not have had this specification appended to their indictment anyway. So for this purpose, we're looking at subsection B of 2950-09. Under B1, the language is clear, must have a hearing if there's no specification. The only way that classification can take place is if the court conducts a sexual predator hearing. In B4, however, the language states that a hearing shall not be conducted if there is a sexually violent predator specification in the indictment. Why? Because a hearing is not necessary. The court would have just conducted a sexually violent predator specification hearing, at which time the state would have presented all the evidence necessary for the court to decide the specification, as well as to decide whether or not a person may be classified as a sexual predator. This language appears to be very clear. However, my 100th reading of this tells me that this language is clear. A hearing shall not be conducted means the court shall not hold a hearing. It's not necessary. All of the information is available to the court in order to make the classification that's necessary. However, the 8th District and the 1st District as well, in State versus Mocked and in State versus Herod, have decided that this language, a hearing shall not be conducted, means that a classification shall not be made.
Maybe if it took you 100 times to read it to understand it, it isn't clear.
Well,
it isn't clear to me.
Well, a plain reading of a hearing shall not be conducted means there shall be no hearing. And when I look at that, I see it does not say that a classification shall not take place. But in deference to the court's interpretation of that, in light of that, the fact that we have two appellate courts that have made that decision, perhaps this suggests that there is an ambiguity with respect to this language, that it isn't clear. And this court has said in Croft versus Ammerheim quite a long time ago that in situations where there is some uncertainty of meaning, the court will judicially interpret a statute. The state is very aware that this court has said on many occasions that where a statute is plain and unambiguous, it will not judicially interpret the statute, it will apply it. However, in deference to these courts' opinions, the state postures that perhaps there is an ambiguity. In that case, if there is an ambiguity, then the court may then look at the legislative intent of the statute. Either way, the court looks at this, if it finds the language is plain, or if it finds that there's an ambiguity, however, in looking at the legislative intent and other statutory constructions that we're allowed to look at, I think we arrive at the same result. And I'll explain.
Did the Court of Appeals do just that? They went through all of that. And frankly, I thought their opinion was pretty good, and I wonder where it went off base with regard to you. Why do you say, where do you take umbrage with it?
Well, I take umbrage with the fact that they have decided that a hearing shall not be conducted where there is a specification in the indictment. They are equating that to a classification shall not be made. And when you consider the legislative intent of the statute, which in a rare move was codified in this particular piece of legislation, if you look at that, the legislature clearly says that the intent behind the statute is to safeguard and protect the community. I know this court is very familiar with the intent of the statute. I don't need to repeat that. You've gone into great detail in State versus Cook and State versus Williams in explaining that. But when you look at that intent, there was no indication that the legislature meant to exempt or exclude any class of offenders, least of all what can be, arguably are the most dangerous offenders, those who have committed sexually violent offenses. That's rape, gross sexual imposition of a child under 13, an activity under the prior felonious sexual penetration statute. These are arguably the most violent offenders. And under the 8th District's interpretation of that language in B4, those offenders would not be classified. In looking at the legislative intent, I don't believe that the legislature meant to exempt any class of offenders from being exempted. This court may also then read this statute, 2950.09, in peri materia with other sections of the legislation, House Bill 180, that was enacted at the same time that contains the same subject matter. And if that court analyzes both sections of the legislation this way and reads them together, again, there is no indication from the legislature that it intended that any group of offenders be exempted. If this court decides that the 8th District's interpretation is correct, what would happen is that there are groups of offenders who will not be classified under this scheme, and they are the most violent and they are the most dangerous offenders. An example of this is, for instance, there's also something called a sexual motivation specification. And in murder cases where we append both the sexual motivation specification and the sexual predator specification to an indictment, we're required to prove that, for instance, a homicide is performed with that is motivated by the needs and the desires, the sexual needs and desires of an offender. When we prove that, we also then need to prove the sexually violent predator specification. But if we don't make that specification, what we have is the most dangerous offender in the state of Ohio, a person who has committed a murder with a sexual motivation. We didn't make the specification. That person, who arguably could be paroled someday, will never be classified as a sexual predator.
If you are convicted of the violent predator spec, what does that do to the sentence?
It can increase the sentence a minimum of 2 years to a maximum of life, or in some cases life without parole, depending on the offense.
Is it mandatory that it does increase the sentence?
Yes, it is.
Okay. If you are convicted or if you are found to be a violently sexual predator what we've determined under Cook is a civil hearing, what does that do to the sentence?
It has no effect on the sentence. In fact, this court has stated quite clearly that it's a remedial hearing, that it's a remedial remedy, and there's no punishment for that.
So the specification has a different purpose in the law in terms of an actual sentence enhancer, and that is different than the classification scheme that simply seeks to protect the public but does not enhance sentencing.
Absolutely. In fact, the factors are different for each, which does not present a problem under this analysis. The factors that the court is required to consider for the sexually violent predator specification are things such as whether or not the defendant has been convicted two or more times of a sexually violent offense, whether or not there's a documented history from childhood that this person has committed sexually deviant behavior. There are a number of other things that the court must look at.
Are the standards of proof different also?
Well, they are, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, with respect to the sexually violent predator specification, the burden of proof, of course, is on the state, and we must prove that specification beyond a reasonable doubt. With respect to the sexual predator classification, the state actually has no burden. However, the court must be convinced by a clear and convincing standard that a person is a sexual predator. Again, that poses no problem because the court is making this determination. The court can, or the jury can, hear the evidence regarding the specification, and then the court makes the determination with respect to the sexual predator classification. So clearly that's something that the court would be able to do.
What do you have to prove as a prosecutor or as the state to get the spec at a reasonable doubt standard? What are the elements you have to prove?
We have to prove that a person has been convicted of a sexually violent offense, which is defined in the definition statute at the beginning. Sexually violent offenses are rape, sexual battery, felonious sexual penetration, gross sexual imposition where the victim is under 13, any attempt, conspiracy, or complicity to commit those crimes. We also, some of the factors then that the court may consider in deciding whether or not we have met that burden are whether or not the defendant has been convicted two or more times of a sexually violent offense, the documented history from childhood of the deviant behavior, information that suggests that the behavior that the defendant exhibits is chronically done with a sexual motivation. Whether or not there's been any torture or ritualistic acts with respect to the sexually violent behavior, and any situation where a victim's life has been placed in jeopardy with respect to the defendant's actions. But the court also, the legislature also notes that any other relevant evidence, of course, can be offered with respect to this. So we have to prove that there's been a the defendant has been convicted of a sexually violent offense and that he is likely in the future to commit another sexually violent offense. With respect to the different factors that the court looks at, I just want to make the point that the court or the jury will be deciding these individual factors with respect to the specification. The court then is solely responsible for making the sexual predator determination. So we don't have a problem with the fact that the factors are different here. Your Honors, in this particular case, that is exactly what the lower court in State versus Jones did. It conducted a sexually violent predator specification hearing. The state conceded, and we concede here, that we did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Lamont Jones was a sexually violent predator. We did not meet our burden of proof. The court acquitted Lamont Jones of that specification. And what the court did is very consistent with both sections A, B, and C of 2950.09, and that is that based on all of the evidence that the state heard, that the court heard, it decided that Lamont Jones is a sexual predator. This is consistent with all sections of the legislation. It is also consistent with the legislative intent, and it is consistent with a full reading of the entire legislation that was passed with respect to sexual predator adjudication and sexual predator classification. And we respectfully ask that this court find that the 8th District was in error in construing this language to mean that no classification shall be made. A classification should be made in this situation. However, a hearing is not necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williamson. Mr. Parker.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is John Parker, and I do represent the appellee, Mr. Jones. With respect to the whole issue of whether my client's a sexual predator or not, obviously I'm asking this court on my client's behalf to affirm the 8th District Court of Appeals. The statutes that have been enacted by the legislature are quite clear. I take a contrary position to my opponent. The statutes are quite clear. There's only one way, actually one of three ways, that a person can be labeled a sexual predator in the state of Ohio. That's under 295009. As Ms. Williamson explained, A and C categories clearly do not apply here. That's not in question. The whole question comes down to how do we interpret Section B. Section B4 specifically prohibits, I mean, it's unambiguous. It's as clear as can be. Specifically prohibits a sexual predator hearing when the prosecutor chooses to attach a sexually violent predator specification to the indictment. And I think it's important to note that the prosecutor has discretion as to whether to attach this specification or not.
How do you assess, counsel, what the thinking might have been to support your analysis in terms of when the legislation was enacted, the public policy? What's your thinking that supports that the prosecutor makes this sort of choice and the failure on the sexually violent aspect inures to the benefit of the defendant in the sexual predator realm, and he or she can never be classified?
What could the thinking be?
I hate to guess
at what the legislature thinks, but I think a reasonable interpretation here is that the analysis that the Court of Appeals followed, in that once you're acquitted of the sexually violent predator, the main issue is, are you likely to engage in one or more sexual offenses in the future? Once you're acquitted of that conduct, as was the case here, there's no need to be for a predator hearing because that acquittal precludes it. And that's what I think
okay.
The legislature was thinking.
But if the acquittal is on a reasonable doubt basis, don't you still have an opportunity, as you do in a civil trial, when, take example of the O.J. Simpson, acquitted of murder on a criminal basis but found criminally liable on a civil basis because the standard is different.
There is no civil trial in this particular case,
no,
Your Honor.
There is a civil classification hearing that follows.
In this case,
there is a different standard.
There is a different standard. I understand what you're saying as far as classification, but it should be pointed out that my client is a sexually oriented offender by definition of his conviction for gross sexual imposition. Now, there are three possible classifications: sexually oriented, habitual, and then predator, and the different types of predator.
Could he be found to be habitual?
I'm sorry?
Could he be found to be habitual?
Not in my case, Your Honor. He only had one conviction, and he had never been to prison before. He had no prior convictions, so he doesn't meet the definition. So I think what happened here is the prosecutor, quite honestly, didn't think through the ramifications of an acquittal. And now that they realize that because there was an acquittal on the specification, that they can't do anything, basically, to have my client found to be a sexual predator.
Prosecutors then better advised to always skip a specification in the enhanced sentence?
I think
that they might not get the predator classification?
I think that's something they have to think through clearly based on the strength of their case and the history of the client. And clearly in this case, based on the fact that he was found not guilty of being a sexually violent predator, I think they overreached. And then basically what they were basing, I don't know how they got the specification in the indictment, to be quite honest, but clearly at the hearing, they were alleging and presented testimony that my client had reoffended actually after his verdict in this case and before sentencing, the trial court found that they didn't meet that burden. So I don't know what their thinking was at the time that the specification was added to the indictment at the beginning of the process, but clearly when it came to presenting testimony, they relied upon this after-verdict allegations. So clearly, I don't think this court needs to get into the intent of the legislature because of B-4. B-4 is very specific. It's very clear. I think the prosecutor's remedy is, one, to think through more carefully when to add a sexually violent predator specification, or two, go to the legislature and change the language of the statute. And I just point out that several cases out of the First District Court of Appeals have held the same way as the court did in this particular case out of the Eighth District. And the Eighth District, in a previous case called State versus Wynn, found the same way here. And there's no court of appeals in this state that has found in the prosecution's favor on this question.
Is it your argument, counsel, that the failure on the sexually violent spec renders the state unable to prove an element of the sexual predator classification somehow, that acquittal precludes in an element sort of way?
Your Honor, under B-4, if there's a specification added, a sexually violent predator specification, there is no hearing whatsoever. So I think the prosecutor is putting all their eggs in one basket, so to speak. They're counting on a conviction on that sexually violent predator spec, because if they get that conviction, it's an automatic classification. If they get an acquittal under the statute...
That's your argument for why the statute would say there shall be or shall be no hearing, is because it's an automatic...
That's correct. On a conviction, it's an automatic.
On a conviction only, okay.
And the reason that makes sense, Your Honor, is because the common element is based on future conduct.
Right.
And if there's an acquittal on the future conduct, that resolves the question.
That's what I mean. It's sort of an element concept that
you can look at. I can understand how one would look at it that way. I'd like to argue, if I may, the sentencing issue, which the prosecutor didn't have a chance to argue or chose not to. But in this particular case, my client was originally sentenced to 4 years in prison by the trial court. Basically, the trial court arrived at that by running two counts consecutive on a two-year sentence, 2 + 2 being 4. Our position is the trial court erred in two ways, and the Court of Appeals found so. One, in imposing more than the minimum under Edmondson and the statute that Edmondson interprets and applies, actually. And that is, my client had never been to prison before, and none of the factors were necessary to justify more than a minimum sentence. And secondly, with respect to consecutive sentences, the trial court absolutely gave no explanation, no finding, no reasons, no nothing on running two counts consecutive. And under well-established law, both the statute and through court interpretation, the court must make necessary findings for consecutive sentencing. That simply wasn't done here. So the Court of Appeals, through 2953.08G, has the ability to increase, modify, or reduce a sentence. And finding that there was error at the trial court level, reviewed the record, applied the various statutes, and decided, I think, quite correctly, that none of the factors are necessary for a more than minimum sentence, and none of the factors are there for a consecutive sentence. And what we're asking this court to do is affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals totally with respect to the sexual predator finding, actually reversing the sexual predator finding, and also affirming the Court of Appeals with respect to the resentencing of my client to 1 year incarceration.
Were you privately retained in this case, or were you appointed?
I was appointed, Your Honor.
And you handled the trial?
No, I did not, Your Honor. I was appointed at the 8th District Court of Appeals.
Okay, so you handled the appeal?
That's correct.
How'd you get appointed here?
Through the 8th District Court of Appeals. Once the decision from the Court of Appeals reversing, and I spoke to the prosecutor and found out they were going to pursue this further, I filed a motion with the 8th District Court of Appeals asking that they appoint someone for counsel, given the fact that the prosecutor was going to appeal. And I was appointed.
So you'd get paid through the 8th District Court of Appeals, hopefully.
I hope so, Your Honor.
Okay.
If there aren't any other questions, That's our position. I ask you to affirm the Court of Appeals in its totality. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. Ms. Williamson, you've saved a little over a minute of your time.
Thank you. Frankly, I'd like to say if the 8th District's decision prevails, if Mr. Parker's version of reading...
I wonder if use your minute, if you would, please, to answer the issue that I discussed with counsel about whether or not the acquittal of the sexually violent specification in essence precludes classifying the defendant as a sexual predator on the basis of his future likely to offend in the future.
Absolutely not.
Why do you say that?
Well, as a matter of fact, all sexually violent offenses are sexually oriented offenses.
Right.
They're contained in the definition. And when we prove a specification, we're required to prove that the offender has been convicted of a sexually violent offense and is likely to engage in the future in another sexually violent offense. When we're talking about the classification, we need only prove that he has been convicted of a sexually oriented offense, which already has been proven by virtue of the fact that he's been convicted of a violent offense.
That's the distinction.
It's the
aspect of the violence.
Correct.
That would not.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If the general, I guess I'm a little bit confounded by the fact that the General Assembly says there shall not be a hearing. It just seems to me that if there, the rest of the statute, as I read it, there's a hearing provided if the question is whether the person is going to be determined to be a sexual predator. It would have been helpful, obviously, if they'd added a line in section B4 to tell us if the acquittal means that there cannot be a determination of a violent or a sexual offender. But doesn't it seem strange that the General Assembly would say there is to be no hearing if there still is an issue relating to the classification?
Actually, I think the hearing is unnecessary. When you think about it, what the state would be required to do is to conduct a sexually violent predator specification hearing, present the victim, family members, possibly experts, other evidence to the court in order for the court to make that determination on the specification or to have the jury do that. And then we would, if there was a chance for a classification, we'd be required to go through that entire process again for the purposes of conducting the sexual predator classification hearing.
That's usually left at the discretion of the court, isn't it? Whether a court wants to have a hearing or not to make a factual determination. Usually a General Assembly doesn't say you shall not have a hearing.
Well, in this case, they were very clear in saying that you shall have a hearing if there's no specification appended to the indictment. If there isn't a specification appended to the indictment, it's not necessary. You will have presented all of the information necessary for the court to make that determination. So that again, is another distinction there. The legislature, I believe, was saying to the state, there's no reason for the state to present all of this evidence twice. The information the court needs is available to it.
And B4 says a hearing shall not be conducted. Court of Appeals says this preclusion only makes sense. You agree with that?
No, I do not. I believe it's not necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Williamson. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.